Broadcasting live from beautiful, historic Marion, Ohio, it's Now with Scott Spears. Call Scott live on the air anytime at 740-383-9944. No topic is too big or too small. I'm your announcer, the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. And now, here's your host, Scott Spears.
Thank you, man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. Scott Spears back with you here Thursday, October 30th, 2025, 18 and a half minutes past the hour. You're tuned into the Now program here on WGH Talk Radio. And as many of you know, tomorrow is Halloween. Today is Halloween Eve, and we have a guest on who really no better guest to have on Halloween Eve, especially here in Ohio. She is the author of the Haunted Ohio book series, which I know many of you follow, Chris Woodyard. Chris, how are you?
Good morning. Happy hauntings.
Happy hunting. How are you here? Is this a favorite time of year for you?
Oh, gosh. It was usually the most exhausted time of year for me because I'd be out. Either people would call me because they thought of me because it was Halloween and they'd want me to come out and investigate, or I was, you know, speaking at a library or a bookstore or something. So it's kind of nice to have it over.
Well, I know what you mean. Well, Chris, how did this whole book series start? How did this come to be?
I blame my librarians. I had written a book about a guidebook to Dayton when we first moved here. And I asked them, they were very enthusiastic and helpful, and I said, what book do you need next? And they immediately said, we need a book of Ohio ghost stories. And I'm like, oh, I can do that standing on my head, because it runs in our family to see and sense ghosts. Apparently, my grandfather was from one of the most haunted places in Switzerland, and they would always tell ghost stories, and they could see them and interact with them. So I sort of came by it honestly. And I had lived in a haunted vintage clothing store in Columbus. And I thought, well, I just won't have any problem getting stories from every 88, one of the 88 counties. Well, it actually took me 10 years. So that's why we have a series.
When you went to a county, how did you find these stories? How did these become apparent?
I looked at newspapers, although it wasn't as easy as it is now because things weren't digitized as much as they were. I would talk to local historical societies. I would talk to local librarians. And after the first book came out, of course, people began to contact me and say, hey, I think I have a ghost in my house. Would you come over and tell me if I'm crazy or not? And usually these people were not crazy in any sense of the word. They just had something weird going on that they couldn't explain. Excuse me. And my rule was that I wasn't to hear anything about it. You know, if you wanted to tell me that you had seen something, that was fine, but I don't want any details. I wanted to go in completely unaware of anything that happened there because I didn't want to be prejudiced by somebody else's stories. So I just go in and I walk around completely alone, taking notes, and then I would compare notes with what the people in the house or the site had experienced. Often it was really fascinating. I was at the Dayton Masonic Temple here. I had been asked to come and visit, and I'm walking around, and all of a sudden this guy pops out at me, and he says, "You can call me George." I'm like, okay, you're going to be my guide or whatever, you know. So I'm walking around, and we see all kinds. I, you know, took all kinds of notes. And then at the end, I was discussing this, and the security guard came in. And they said, she saw a ghost. She's got a photo of him. And because I had seen his photo in the, like, rosters of Masonic men in the one room. He said, well, I'm not going to describe him then if she's got a photo. And we went and looked at the photo, and he turned pale. He says, that's the guy I see around here all the time. So I didn't know anything about this site. I had no idea. I'd never been there before, and they hadn't told me anything. So it's always interesting when you can verify something that somebody's already seen.
Now, in a situation like that, what goes through your mind? How do you explain it?
How do I explain it?
Yeah.
Well, there are several ways to explain it. A, I'm hallucinating. B, I'm mentally ill, and I'd probably be the last to know that. C, telepathy? And what's the mechanism? Honestly, I don't know how to explain it. I just try to put in as many controls as I can in terms of don't tell me anything, and then we see where it goes from there. So I really don't have an explanation, although there do seem to be different kinds of ghosts. That one was unusually active and sentient. He seemed to actually be present there, like he enjoyed he enjoyed his time there, so he was just going to hang around. There's ghosts that come back to protect people or check on people to see if they're all right. I've heard this especially when maybe there's a new baby in the house and people say, oh yeah, my mom who'd passed away, and I saw her standing by the crib looking at the baby. Now that may be just wish fulfillment, but if it comforts somebody, you know, that's, to me, okay. There are also ghosts that act like videotapes that just sort of do the same thing over and over and over, like they're on some kind of a tape loop. There's ghosts that come back for one specific reason. One woman told me that her husband came back and said, now I want you to make sure you buy those storm windows we discussed. And she was kind of disappointed, you know, that that was all he came back for. And then there's what I call time warp, where you actually seem to see something in the past. You can see a building or a person or animals or objects, and it's not really a standard sort of haunting. I had this happen at a house in Dayton, pulled up to the house, and the house looked really scary. It was, the paint was peeling off of it, and there was this big old barn out back on the top of the hill that looked kind of run down. And I looked at my address, and it was like, oh, that's not the house. It's this new house next door I'm supposed to be visiting. So I did my visit there, and we saw what we saw, and came back out, and I said to the lady, oh, ha, 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 I thought this was the haunted house, and look, it has that spooky barn out back. And she looked at me really funny, and she said, well, we had the barn torn down because it was getting too dangerous for the kids. I thought, what, 15 minutes ago you tore it down? And I went to look, and it wasn't there anymore. It was there when I drove up, and then an hour later, it's gone. So I don't know what to think about that.
Now, what do you say to people who are obviously skeptical of a story like that?
Sure. I think it's important to be skeptical while ghost hunting. It's vital. Because I see people on TV and stuff, everybody wants to be caught up in the moment, and they want to find proof of the paranormal, which leads to people, you know, seeing or feeling things that, or interpreting ordinary events as hauntings. And people who live in what they think is a haunted house may be so frightened that they don't think of alternate reasons for what's happening. So when somebody says, well, why should I believe this? I say, I can't prove one syllable of what I write about. I can't prove it. There's no way. There's no scientific proof. You know, the TV shows want you to think it's scientific. There's these magnetic detectors and all these things, and it's I look at that and I'm like, oh, that's detecting a metal stovepipe in the wall. So there's no manual that says when you get this degree of whatever magnetic resistance that there's a ghost. So there's really no way to prove any of it.
You know, it's interesting. Years ago, I was interviewing the late comedian Phyllis Diller. And, of course, Phyllis is from Ohio, Lima, Ohio. Yeah. And she had been on a show called Celebrity Ghost Story. And yeah, she was talking about a ghost she had seen. And I was talking with her, I think it was her 95th birthday, and I was saying, Phyllis, do you ever think of death at this age? And she said, of course, I think about it all the time. And I said, well, what happens when you die? What's your belief? And she said, well, I don't think anything happens. And I said, well, that's kind of interesting, Phyllis, because I saw you on Celebrity Ghost Story recently about, I think it was on A&E at the time, about seeing a ghost. And she said, well, for the money they paid me, I did temporarily. And I think a lot of people kind of feel that way, that's what's going on.
Mm. And I have to say, yes, with the ghost hunting shows, for example, I did one of those once. And at the beginning, they were like, oh, now this is completely serious. We don't do anything fake or hokey. And I get to the where we're going to be filming, and they bring out the smoke machine. And I'm like, okay, all right. Yeah, but I told my story as honestly as I could. Whatever, you know. So that's interesting that she felt she was being paid to tell the story.
Yeah. Is this proof of life after death? Is that what it is? Is that maybe to make us feel better that when our life here is over, that we go somewhere and maybe death isn't so scary?
That's absolutely right. As I said, if people find these stories comforting, then I don't have any quarrel with that. Where I have a quarrel is when somebody starts saying, oh, we ran into a demon, ghosts are all demons, and I got scratched or whatever. And, you know, people get killed in various parts of the world for being accused of being a witch or being, you know, demonic in some way. So I'm really cautious about that particular theme that has popped up a lot in these ghost hunting shows, and I know why they're doing it, because it's more exciting. You know, you can't just sit there and say, did you hear that, for so long. It gets boring. So we've got to up the ante by having demons. But if it's proof of, again, there is no proof. It is all belief, and I have my own beliefs about the afterlife. I'm sure other people have their own. But there's no way to actually prove it. Although in the 19th century and early 20th century, there were a lot of people in the spiritualist movement who would set tests. They would say, you know, if this is real, if you're still there, you know, come back and tell me this thing that nobody else knows. Mm. And maybe that works and maybe that doesn't. I don't know. There was we know that there were traveling mediums that went from city to city, and they would immediately show up to the local mediums and get information on people that were likely to come to a seance. They had notebooks of, okay, this woman lost her son, this was his name, this was his favorite food, and then it would look like this traveling medium knew all this amazing information without knowing the woman. So there were lots of scams that went on, and it may still go on. I haven't frequented spiritualist circles in a long time.
Well, it's interesting. Chris, when you started to put the books together, how did you decide what would go in the book and what would not? Because I'm sure you heard other stories.
Oh, sure. And when you heard someone who started out with a ghost story, and it was a pretty standard ghost story, you know, there's something's on the door, or, you know, the lights flicker, and then they would suddenly segue into, I also see UFOs, or every house I've lived in is haunted, or, oh yeah, then there was a Bigfoot with green fur and 3-foot horns. They would start exaggerating, and that's when we're done. You know, I don't want to put that kind of stuff in the books. I tried to interview people. There's a whole collection of folk tales in Ohio that have ghostly themes, so I used some of those. Again, going to historic sites. I started also with my haunted vintage clothing store in Columbus. I lived upstairs, and I would hear these footsteps up and down the stairs, and there wasn't anybody else there. It turned out I had one room in the back where we kept the sewing things. I really hated, and I wouldn't go in there after dark. So I sent a friend of mine up there to get something, and I didn't tell her anything. And she came screaming back downstairs because she had seen this guy standing in the closet. I didn't realize it, but she's also kind of sensitive to these things, and I'm not sure she's yet forgiven me for sending her up there without warning. But it turned out that the place had been a doctor's office, and he had lived upstairs, and he had actually died in that room. So we figured it was just him hanging around, causing trouble. He pushed one of my sales assistants down the stairs, and I didn't believe her. She was wearing a long skirt because this was a vintage clothing store, and I said, "Oh, you just caught your heel in your skirt." And she says, "No, I felt a hand shoving me in my back." So who knows? I don't know if he's still there. I think it's in, I think it's a music store now.
Is a ghost a person who has been alive before? What is a ghost?
That's what I would say. There's people who want to make a difference between a spirit and a ghost, and that's fine. I personally don't make that distinction. I usually think it's a spirit of a dead person. They're either stuck here, maybe they don't know they're dead because they died too quickly or too suddenly, or they don't want to be dead. They're denying they're dead, and I've run into several of those. Or they're lingering for some specific reason. Like I said, they want to look, watch over a person or a place. So that's the primary type of definition I would give for a ghost.
In the years you've been doing this, what stands out as the most memorable experience you've had?
Oh, gosh. There are so many. There were a couple. The Ohio State Reformatory, of course, everybody knows that place from the Shawshank Redemption. And it's a very active place, in my opinion, although I'm not sure how much things have been stirred up by having ghost tours. I think the more a place is investigated, the more haunted it becomes. And I don't know if that's just because we're somehow putting our energies into it. It's almost like when kids play the Ouija board and they're all keyed up and they're putting their energies into the Ouija board. Yeah, something's going to come. Something's going to happen. So that was one place that really stood out because I was accosted by a very young ghost. He was wearing the usual prison uniform. And he started whining at me. "Get me out of here. Take me out of here." And I'm like, "You're dead. You can go anytime you want to." And he just kept whining. And it just got on my last nerve. So I did my little investigation, and then I walked out. And he jumped on my back. Like, "I'm not going to let you go. I'm not going to let you leave." And I'm shrugging, like, "Get off me, get off me." And the woman who had invited me was watching, because I was hoping nobody was seeing this. And she says, "Yeah, I thought you had a yellow jacket down your back." So finally he left, and I wouldn't have allowed him to get in my car or anything. So that was memorable. And at Fort Meigs, they have a good ghost tour there. This was a fort from the War of 1812, and I saw a very young man wandering around, just kind of like up and down the redoubts, because they have these mounds of dirt that were built to protect from shells. And as I was walking around, suddenly I saw him waving his arms like, you know, you would try to signal somebody. And I thought, is he waving at me? Can he actually see me? So I didn't know what to make of that. I wrote it down, and then I was speaking to one of the historians who works there, and I was very cautious because, you know, people are sometimes put off by ghost things. But eventually I said, you know, I did see this young man waving his arms. You know, what would that be? And he says, oh, there was a group of soldiers that ventured out, and they were lured away and massacred. And the people in the fort could see that they were walking into an ambush, and they were up on the redoubts waving their arms and calling them to return. And he thinks that he was either one of those people, or he was what was called a shot spotter. They would watch for incoming shot and direct people to get out of the way. So I thought that was quite interesting. Because I couldn't really interpret what he was doing, but the historian had a perfectly logical explanation.
You know, with tomorrow being Halloween and so many people listening to this living in Ohio, if there are skeptical people, but people who are open to seeing things and feeling things, where would be some places you would recommend that they could go to spend Halloween, enjoy themselves, and maybe have a good story or feel or see something?
Well, there are a lot of ghost tours in Ohio, and I always recommend that people look for something that is actually a local tour. Excuse me. There's a national company I'm not going to name who has come in and taken over, like, stolen information from local writers and researchers and tour guides. So you want to make sure that you've got something that's really generated by somebody who lives in the area and knows the local stories. I can't really give any specifics because by Halloween a lot of things are over. I know the State House in Columbus offers a good tour, and I know there are tours in Chillicothe that are good. They also, I think, have a pumpkin fest. But in terms of ghosts, don't always appear just on Halloween, so I don't say you have to go out on Halloween to see one.
Now, what's going on at the State House as far as paranormal activity?
I have not actually investigated there, so this is all more in the line of a local folklore or legend. They have the catafalque that Lincoln was laid on, and apparently there's things going on in the crypt. What those things are, I don't know. Well, nobody's actually seen the ghost of Lincoln or anything like that, although supposedly he is seen dancing in the center part of the building where it's a big open area with, I think, his Secretary of State Stanton's daughter, Kate. There is a whole group of stories there, but I don't have them at my fingertips because I haven't investigated there.
Now, have any public officials that we would know, governors, seen this happening?
Not that I have heard of. The governor's mansion in Columbus used to be said to be haunted by a servant woman, but it's no longer the governor's mansion, so I don't think, I think it's not open to the public or anything.
Now, Chris, why can't you be photographed?
That's just my little joke, because supposedly people take pictures of ghosts and it's always kind of blurry, and they send me pictures and I'm like, I'm sorry, I can't see anything. Even if you circle it, I can't see it. Anyway, that's my little joke. And also, there's been some people who would like to see my books banned because they're obviously, satanic or something. They just don't like the idea of ghosts at all. And I had some stalker threat things, and I don't need people to know what I look like.
Everybody's got critics, I guess, no matter what you do.
Oh, yeah, sure, yeah.
Why do you think that happens, though? I mean, you're just writing these stories. Why people so passionate to be stalkers and call you satanic?
Well, I think it's partly religious objections. And I actually asked my pastor when I was starting writing these, I said, what does the Bible say about ghosts? And it says that they exist. I mean, the apostles believed that the risen Christ was a ghost, and they were frightened. What it says is we're not supposed to go out there and deliberately communicate with them. And I don't hold seances. I don't use Ouija boards. If they talk to me, sometimes I talk back, but I'm not out there in the dark going, shouting at the ghost to try to get them to respond like they do on the ghost shows. Again, people have religious objections to it.
What has been the most fun in writing these books?
Oh, gee. What fascinates me is going into a house that I've never been into or a building and knowing nothing about it and seeing the same things or feeling the same things in the same places that the people have reported then. It just really is interesting to me. And again, I can't explain it, but it's just fascinating. The other thing that I find fascinating is when you have a story and you find a different version of it. The Headless Motorcyclist of Elmore is this wonderful story. It's like a spook light that comes down the road. Supposedly a young man came back from the First World War and found his girlfriend had married somebody else. So he roars off down the road and he goes off the road and is decapitated by barbed wire. And ever since then, if you honk your horn 3 times and blink your lights 3 times, you'll see this light coming down the road. And that's the modern story. And people go out there and look for this. Well, when we started getting more digitized newspapers, I went looking for this story to see if I could find the actual origin of it or the earliest version of it. It had nothing to do with a motorcyclist. There were balls of light, mysterious balls of light, chasing people on the road, or they would actually knock people out. But they were associated with some shack where this local hermit had supposedly hanged himself. So I found it really interesting how it turned from a classic spook light story into this ghostly suicide and motorcyclist.
Mm.
And one gentleman, I was speaking in the area, and he came up to me and he says, you know, I went out there on the right date, and I honked my horn 3 times, and I blinked my lights 3 times. I looked in my rearview mirror, and what do you think I saw? I'm like, oh, he had me hook, line, and sinker. And I'm like, what did you see? He says, I saw 30 other people honking their horns and blinking their lights.
You know, it is so interesting, especially to hear this time of year. And I think about what you said about Abraham Lincoln in the State House dancing there. We've had so many famous people from Ohio. We talked about Phyllis Diller. There have been other actors, comedians, politicians, mm-hmm. governors. Are there any Ohio personalities that everybody listening would know that are haunting anything in Ohio?
I really haven't found that many. I mean, we have ghostly stories about the presidents. And there's people that say that President Garfield has been seen at his home in, I think it's Mentor, Lawnview. And who knows, he may still be there. We have stories about, I'm trying to remember, supposedly where Garfield went to school and he boarded in this house, and supposedly he came back and was like working crossword puzzles. The family claimed that. So it's more those kinds of things than more recent famous people. I mean, I'm sure if we looked hard, we could find some, but that hasn't been my main focus, was famous people.
Well, it's interesting because obviously Marion is the hometown of Warren Harding, and actually the studio here, we're less than a mile away from where he lays his memorial. So it's interesting to think of those things.
Well, now, there was a very interesting incident, and it's never been solved. Before the memorial was built, obviously, they put his coffin into a holding vault. And there were all kinds of disturbances. It was like poltergeist disturbances where somebody was blasting a trumpet. The soldiers were throwing stones at the soldiers who were on guard. And the soldiers were told, yes, you can shoot on sight, whoever it is. But nobody was ever caught. And I thought, that's a risky business if you're just trying to play a prank. So I don't know what that was about, and it was never solved.
Yeah. And things like that are interesting. And are we ever really going to have answers to any of these questions?
I don't think so, unless after we die, we suddenly, you know, get brought into a classroom and schooled on how this stuff works.
Well, and I think the big question a lot of people have, because most skeptics that I've ever run into, they're not angry people. They just have a hard time wrapping their mind around it.
Sure.
And I think one of the reasons is they think, well, if there is life after death and there are ghosts, what would be the problem with us knowing that and us all seeing it?
And I don't have an answer for that either. It's almost more of a theological problem of, there are just mysteries that we do not know about.
Yeah. And I think we'll always be that way. Have you ever gotten tired of writing these books?
I'm not sure about tired writing them. I wish I could find some really new stories. You eventually get tired of just the flickering lights and the footsteps or the something banging in the attic, because there's too many explanations for those kinds of things. But I've really enjoyed getting into the historic records and getting into the newspapers. And you can't necessarily trust what you're reading in a 19th century newspaper because they did make up stories. But even so, I've often said that sometimes it doesn't matter if the ghost story is true or not. It's what did that mean to the people who are reading it? Did it comfort them? Was it just to scare them? Was it to make some sort of moral lesson? Like, oh, don't do this or you're going to end up haunting this house and be miserable. So it's just been fascinating reading the older historical stories.
If you were speaking to a group and you wanted to best convince them or entertain them by a story that is true, what story would you tell them about Ohio hauntings?
I don't think you can convince people who don't want to be convinced. That's the issue. I don't know. Possibly the U.S. Air Force Museum, or it's now called the Museum of the United States Air Force. Many, many people have experienced things there, and many military people have experienced things there. They used to have security guards at night that were, you know, reporting things on a regular basis. There's a helicopter there. They call it Black Mariah because it's painted dead flat black, and you can see the hundreds of patched bullet holes all over it. And sometimes you can see the dead pilot sitting in the seat moving the stick. Mm. And I'm not the only one who's reported that.
Did you ever think there would be this many books written? How many have you written now?
Well, I've written 7 of the Haunted Ohio series, and then there were 2 more of historic Ohio ghost stories, The Face in the Window and The Headless Horror. But, yes, everybody's got a book out, you know, about a different county or a different location. I mean, you've got the Haunted Marion, Ohio book there by Joshua Simpkins. So everybody's putting out these books of local stories. So it's nice to have people capturing the local folklore.
Do you have any regrets about anything you've put in a book?
I'm sure that there are things that I've made mistakes over. And I've tried to correct those in, you know, subsequent editions. And I did have one fellow who basically told me something that the family didn't want put in the book, and I removed it. But generally, no. I've tried to be as honest as I can in reporting these stories. So I don't think I really have too many regrets.
Without obviously telling us what it was they didn't want in the book, why didn't they want it in the book?
I think they just didn't want... the family name was kind of what was bothering them, and it was an innocuous story about a spook light. So there wasn't anything scandalous about it. I've also been very, very careful. There's been stories that did not get into the book because the family is still in the area, and it was a traumatic death or it was a suicide, and I'm not going to put them through that just to have a ghost story told.
Is there a story that you have right now that you've come upon recently that you have not published yet that would be interesting?
I haven't really. Most of my stories recently, I've been writing about Victorian death and mourning. So I haven't really been studying the ghost stories as much as I sometimes have. So I've really focused more on the death aspects.
Of the books that you've written, which is your favorite?
Oh, gosh, that's like asking which of my kids is my favorite. My daughter says that The Haunted Ohio 3 is the scariest. She found it the scariest one. So I'm kind of partial to The Face in the Window because that was my first one doing historic stories, and that's got the Elmore headless motorcyclist correction in there showing the original story.
Why do we continue to be entertained by, as you say, everybody writes a book, there are television shows, movies. Why is it so entertaining? It's scary, but and sometimes just interesting, but we're continuously entertained by it.
I know, and I think there's some part of our brain that's just kind of hardwired for the scare. You know, people like to ride scary things like, you know, scary carnival rides. They know that the thing's not going to come off the track, or at least they hope it isn't, but it gives them that adrenaline rush. And I think we need that from time to time, and we also, I think, need maybe something of mystery in our lives, you know, that isn't going to be solved tomorrow, but we can wonder about it. And there's nothing, I like the idea of people being curious about things like this.
When you go to investigate a site, how do you do it? What are the protocols or tools that are used?
No tools, just a notebook and a pen. And I just say, don't tell me anything about it. I'm going in by myself because if somebody's following me, they're going to be distracting me. And I don't, you know, I can't afford to be distracted. So, you know, that's my rule, is don't tell me anything. Let me go in by myself and walk around. I'll take my notes. We'll discuss afterwards. That's as simple as it can be.
There obviously are a lot of places like the Ohio Reformatory, which gets a lot of, the old Ohio Reformatory, which gets a lot of attention. But is there a particular story in Ohio that is probably the most widely known?
I think the headless motorcyclist is pretty well known. I'm wondering if people know about the Buxton Inn in Granville. That's haunted by a man whose Christian name was Major. So Major Buxton haunts the place. He showed up in my room. I was staying there before the night before a book fair, and I woke up at maybe 3 in the morning, and he's sitting across the room from me in a chair, just looking happy and smiley and like he's just come to pay a social call. And I said, "You're scaring me. Please leave." And he smiled and just kind of went poof. So lots of people have seen him. They've seen a lady named Bonnie Bonnell, the Lady in Blue, who also has a particular perfume that people smell in this one room. There's also a ghost cat, also named Major Buxton, that people have felt jumping up onto their bed in the middle of the night. So a very active place, and you can go and stay there. And they're low-key about it. They're not exploiting the hauntings or anything. But it's a nice, interesting, historic inn.
Now, when you saw Major Buxton in your room at 3 a.m., is this, does it look like a person sitting there? Is it somebody who is glowing?
No. He looked. When I see them, they look perfectly solid. They look perfectly real. And people say, well, how can you tell the difference? Well, when they disappear in front of you, that's probably correct. And, you know, people could say, well, you were not really awake. That was a residual dream. I was awake. But in any case, I've never seen anything in a bloody mummy suit. I've never seen anything headless. They're just normal-looking people. But I'm maybe not seeing them with my eyes. I'm seeing them more, you know, how they talk about a third eye, sort of in the middle of your forehead. It seems as though I'm seeing them a different way. I'm not necessarily seeing them with my eyes.
If somebody else were in the room, do you think they would see them?
It depends if they're sensitive. My daughter is sensitive, and she and I have been in the same room and seen the same things.
Hmm. Do people have a message? Have you ever gotten a message from somebody?
Not in the way that you would think in terms of, somebody shows up and says, I have a message for you. I was in a place, and I haven't published this because, again, the family is in the area, and I'm not going to say where it is. but this gentleman committed suicide, and he showed up as I'm looking around the place, and he was crying. And he said, tell my wife, I'm sorry. And he was just so, so sad. And I said, you can tell her, you can tell her yourself, because I know she was dead by that time. And he just kept crying. He couldn't apparently hear me. But he kept saying, please tell my wife. And I felt very bad for him, because he'd had kind of a sad life and had lost his son to an illness. And then he'd lost his wife to someone else. So he was a very unhappy person.
You know, that's an interesting story, because if the wife is dead, are people not reunited? Do they not run into each other?
Apparently not. Or maybe she's keeping away from him. That's just almost like a joke. I don't know. other people have said, yes, I know that there are some historic stories where, for example, a woman sees her dead husband holding their dead child, and she knows that they're together, that kind of thing. So I guess it just depends on the relationship.
Well, we're just about at the end of the interview here, and I got a couple more questions I want to ask. But do you have a story pre-Halloween? You've told us a few, but another one that sticks out in the mind. People love to hear these stories.
Let's see what we can come up with. This was at a place in Toledo called Collingwood Arts Center, and it's used to be the mother house for the Ursuline nuns who taught school. And it's got lots of ghostly nuns there. Surprise. It's now a place where artists live and work. There's studios there. And so people lived in the site and were conscious of what was going on. So I was brought in and just sort of was walking around, and upstairs in what were the nuns' workrooms, there's a nun sitting there sewing. And she just looks up and she gives a little wave of her hand and smiles. And I'm like, why is she here? She's just doing exactly as she did in life. What is that about? So maybe it was just her happy place when she was alive, that she was still there. And then there was, in the auditorium, there was a very, very nasty nun present. I was up in the balcony, and she was looking up at me and just radiating this malevolence. It was quite horrifying. And the people who had brought me there afterwards said, yeah, lots and lots of people have seen her, and she's bad news. So that was one of the more interesting places to go to see these nuns. I'm trying to think of any other most, top hits. Pardon me. Now, everybody, I think, knows about Athens, and the old, what was called the insane asylum there. This is one of the best known and most horrifying stories. This woman who couldn't speak and couldn't hear wandered away. They thought she was on leave. She was allowed to go out into the community, but she disappeared, and she somehow locked herself in this remote, unused room, and she died there, unable to call for help. And her mummified body wasn't found for several years, and the stain of this body can still be seen on the floor. And it's said that she's seen at the windows, waving and trying to make herself heard.
What amazing stories these are, and a lot of them captured in these books. Are you still writing ghost books?
Not at the moment. As I said, I'm concentrating more on the Victorian death angle. I've also got some fictional ghost stories that I'd like to get out there. There's so many people writing the ghost books these days. It's like, what else could I possibly add?
Well, you've added a lot with all the books you've written, because people love them, people still buy them, people enjoy them this time of year, and really all times of the year. And it's been a pleasure to have you on today on this Halloween Eve. Thank you so much for coming on, Chris.
Thank you, and have a happy Halloween.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Chris Woodyard, the author of the Haunted Ohio books. What else on Halloween Eve? For this day, Scott Spears heading for the dugout.
Social Security Administration. Social Security will not threaten you, demand your personal information, or instant payment. Email or text your